Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today marks the 16th anniversary of the attacks of September 11th. And at Ground Zero in New York this morning, the names of those killed that day in 2001 were read by family members.
Craig Montano.
Michael G. Montesi.
Carlos Alberto Montoya.
Memorials also took place in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Lorraine Grace Bay.
And at the Pentagon.
Charles S. Falkenberg. And his wife, Leslie A. Whittington. And their two children, Dana Falkenberg and Zoe Falkenberg.
Just some of the names of the nearly 3,000 people killed by terrorists on September 11th, 2001. President Donald Trump today laid a wreath at the Pentagon Memorial.
On that day, not only did the world change, but we all changed. Our eyes were opened to the depths of the evil we face. But in that hour of darkness, we also came together with renewed purpose. Our differences never looked so small. Our common bonds never felt so strong. The sacrifice grounds on which we stand today are a monument to our national unity and to our strength.
Boston, too, has an indelible connection to 9/11. Two of the four hijacked planes took off from Logan Airport that day, American Airlines Flight 11 and United Airlines Flight 175. Both planes were crashed into the World Trade Center by hijackers. Outside the Massachusetts State House today, the Ahmadiyya Muslim community hosted their annual Muslims for Life blood drive to honor the victims of 9/11 and to spread a message of hope and peace from the Muslim community. Here's Nasir Rana of Ahmadiyya Boston.
We want to make it an unequivocal statement that there is no place for terrorism in Islam. There has never been any place for terrorism in Islam. Islam, as the root word means, peace.
And inside the State House, Massachusetts political leaders came together. Boston Police Superintendent in Chief William Gross spoke at the ceremony.
You can never, ever break our great nation. You can't do it. You never could. We've been the first and greatest nation in the world for a long time, for hundreds of years, because this great nation includes everybody. And I'm not trying to be political in my next statement. No walls, no barriers will ever keep our nation from growing. It's an all-inclusive nation.
And I'll rise up, I'll rise like a day. I'll rise up, rise unafraid, I'll rise up.
That's Berklee College's Astha Shastra performing Rise Up today at the State House. Sounds from 9/11 memorials today in Boston. Well, let's turn to the day's other news. Michael Resendiz, Globe Spotlight team reporter, joins us now. He's been covering some truly remarkable changes at Bridgewater State Hospital, the state's once deeply troubled facility for male inmates suffering from mental illness. Michael, it's good to have you back on the show.
Yeah, real pleasure.
Absolutely fantastic changes that you documented in your story about Bridgewater State. But first of all, let's just like march back in time a little and remind folks how troubled the facility was not that long ago. I mean, what happened there that led to its need for a dramatic turnaround?
Well, it was a gruesome, horrific place where people who were seriously mentally ill, it's a facility for men, so men who were seriously mentally ill were strapped down by their wrists and ankles, were held in solitary confinement for months at a time. This is really akin to torture. There's really no other word for it. And people died there.
Yeah.
People died as a result of being placed in four-point restraints. Not only that, but in 2009, when Joshua Messier was killed by guards in his cell, even though his death was ruled a homicide, the State Department of Correction covered it up. No one was disciplined. No one was prosecuted. No one was investigated. The Department of Corrections simply put out a statement that said everything was done according to standard procedure.
Mm, mm. And then again, it was the Globe that revealed in 2014 about that cover-up. And so Governor Charlie Baker called for some significant changes. We'll talk in a minute about how those changes took place at Bridgewater State. But you visited recently. What did you see there?
Well, I did visit with a Globe photographer, and I was really taken aback because I had visited Bridgewater State Hospital on a couple of prior occasions. And I got to say, on those prior occasions, it was really kind of a scary place. I visited the intensive treatment unit, ironically named because that's where people essentially were tortured, tied down by their wrists and ankles or held in solitary confinement. And when I visited last week, I found that the intensive treatment unit was shut down, closed, no more.
No more. And so what's taken its place? What's the feel there? And, you know, what's the sort of the difference in how patients are treated overall?
Well, the patients are treated as people, not as dangerous subhuman convicts. And the result is really, truly remarkable. The patients that are in there, they're no longer dressed in prison garb. They wear street clothes. So you have people who have a serious mental illness, but they're walking around in Bermuda shorts and T-shirts and sandals. And the security officers and the mental health workers, they're not wearing prison guard uniforms. There are some of the mental health workers there. They wear hospital scrubs. And the idea, the whole idea, is to make the Bridgewater campus feel more like a hospital than a state prison, even though it still is a state prison.
Yeah. So in a moment, we're going to talk to the assistant hospital administrator at Bridgewater State. But Michael, remind us, it was just this past April, right? Just a couple of months ago, when the Baker administration hired a private firm, Correct Care Recovery Solutions. They took over management of the hospital. So all of these changes have taken place in an incredibly short period of time. And advocates are even saying, external advocates who've been tracking the changes say that they're kind of amazed that so much positive change can happen so quickly.
Yes, I talked to the longtime critics of Bridgewater State Hospital. I mean, these are firebrands.
Yeah.
And they were saying that what's happened at Bridgewater State Hospital is astounding, extraordinary. Those were the words they were using. So the fact that this happened so very, very quickly, I think, shows that, you know, we can solve this problem. We can treat people with a mental illness who are involved in the criminal justice system in a humane way and get extraordinary results.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Michael Resendiz. He's the Boston Globe Spotlight team reporter, talking to us about the dramatic improvements that are being seen at Bridgewater State Hospital, improvements since just this past April, so just the past couple of months. Michael, stand by here for just a moment, if you could, because I'd like to introduce now Kevin Ann Hochschorn. She is the assistant hospital administrator at Bridgewater State Hospital. And she joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks. Hi, Michael. This is Kevin.
Hello, Kevin. Yeah.
So first of all, Kevin Ann, if you could, can you just walk us through how you implemented some of these changes? I mean, as Michael reporting in his Globe piece, for example, the practice of strapping patients down by their wrists and ankles at Bridgewater State has been cut by 98%. I mean, so what's different that has affected so much change so rapidly?
Well, you're correct, Megan. And I guess I'd first have to say that before we even got there, so many people had come to the table to work on this really important issue, including the Department of Correction and the Disability Law Center and Department of Mental Health, families of persons served, and, of course, the great work done by the Globe. And then the governor who clearly had great foresight and great compassion, who basically laid out our work for us, which was to operate the facility as a hospital, not a prison, to ensure that each person served, participated in, and got individual treatment plans, and first and foremost, to reduce the use of seclusion and restraint, which this company has a great reputation of doing.
Hmm. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, basically, we to do the reduction in seclusion and restraint, We really focus on prevention of the kind of conflicts and violence that lead to having to put hands on people in the first place. And, you know, I really have to hand it to our staff. We brought in a large number of brand new staff who got very fast training and just took to that and changed that training into competencies more quickly than I ever could have imagined in terms of treating people in this hospital like human beings who could be listened to, talked to, that could be included in discussions about their own treatment, and whose needs needed to be met in a very quick manner. Because when you've taken away just about every manner in which an adult could get their own needs met by locking them up into any kind of hospital, staff are now the point people to basically meet those patients' needs and to help them get along and help them feel comfortable and help them feel safe.
Yeah. So if I just may, on that point, I mean, can you clarify for me how much new staff did you bring in and how much of Bridgewater's old staff is still with you? Because in Michael's piece, he talked about that some of the old staff members still had concerns about their safety. And I wonder what changes you made to sort of assure those who stayed on that their safety was still paramount.
Yeah. Well, we have about 500 staff now, and about 400 were brand new, brought on to do this work. And then the remaining staff that had been working at Bridgewater for a long time, you know, I think they probably had to take a deep breath. They were warned by a number of people that this was going to be very dangerous once the officers left, and they had a lot of courage. They got the same training as the new staff, and they're still there. They're doing an awesome job. And they have assimilated into this new culture very, very well. We have lost some people, people that didn't like the work or they didn't want to stay in that work environment. But very, very small numbers of folks have left. Mm. So I think we're coming together. As you pointed out, it's only been about 5 months.
Yeah. Michael, if I can turn back to you for a moment, because it seems like this is a situation in which, as you know, both you and Kevin Ann have been saying, that everybody came together, all the most important stakeholders who were invested in improving, you know, beyond all of us in the Commonwealth as a whole, but who were directly invested in improving the situation at Bridgewater State, did indeed come together. In addition, so did Beacon Hill, right? Because some additional $19 million of funding was authorized to help out Bridgewater State.
Yeah, that's true. And I have to give Governor Baker credit for this. You know, when I started to pay attention to the possibility of reform, and by the way, I should say that there have been many reform efforts over the last several decades that have been announced and either came to nothing or briefly improved things, only to have the entire institution backslide. But I really sat up and took notice when Governor Baker unveiled his reform plans in his State of the State speech in January. I thought he was really putting his name and his reputation and his legacy on the line by doing that. But still, my attitude was, I'll see it when I believe it. Well, now I've seen it, and now I believe it, and give the governor credit for the leadership he's exercised.
Yeah, so that 39% increase in the funding for Bridgewater State Hospital, is that permanent now, or was it one time?
My understanding is that it's one time.
Okay. Oh, it's one time. All right. So, Kevin Ann, is there, while the changes that have been made in the past 5 months are truly remarkable and for the better, do you have any concerns about the sustainability of what you're doing there at the hospital?
In implementing this culture change, this transformation, we're really using a model called the 6 core strategies to prevent violence and conflict and to create a care system that's based on recovery and based on trauma-informed care. And so, no, I don't. What I've noted over the years, I've been doing this work for about 17 years in a number of hospitals, is that the key piece is having sustainable, committed leadership that are involved on the ground and aren't going anywhere. And I can tell you that as far as we're concerned, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. So there's a there's a peculiarity about Bridgewater State that some mental health advocates who Michael talked to still pointed out, that Bridgewater State Hospital is still under the Department of Corrections. And in the long run, they'd really like to see it under the Department of Mental Health, because then perhaps we could get, you know, a long term kind of oversight through the Department of Mental Health that advocates are worried it doesn't have now. I mean, Kevin Ann, do you think that would actually be sort of an important structural change for Bridgewater State Hospital?
You know, I know that there are a number of people working on that question, and the governor has put together a task force to look at that issue as well as building a new hospital, but I don't think I'm probably in a position to really address that.
Yeah. Michael Resendi is left. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I was saying what I think the position of some of the advocates I've talked to is that if the facility is transferred to the Department of Mental Health, there will be a lot more protections in place in state law for the people who are at Bridgewater. And so in a way, transferring it to the Department of Mental Health is a safeguard against backsliding, which has happened, in, as I said, in previous years under previous reform proposals.
Yeah.
And Meghna, I can also just mention that we are using the Massachusetts Department of Mental Health policies and procedures, and we're weaving those into our own to start getting closer and closer to the standard of care, because Massachusetts is widely believed to be a leader in mental health care.
Yeah.
In the country.
Yeah. You know, this is a story that it is so gratifying to see that so many positive improvements have been made. And Michael, I'm just wondering, I mean, you've been on this for a long time. What do you think ultimately the lessons are to learn from the turnaround that we're seeing at Bridgewater State Hospital?
Well, I got to say, I mean, I have a vested interest in this, but I think what we're seeing here is really the power of the media. I mean, I wrote something like 30 stories over the course of 3 years, and I think it just shows people why we need a strong, independent media to take a look at problems and find out who's responsible and identify some solutions, hold people to account, and then people like Governor Baker can step in and say, hey, we got a real problem here and we need to do something about
it. Yeah, absolutely. Accountability then followed by action, where all the stakeholders come together. I think if we can have more of both, it's better for us all. Michael Resendiz, reporter for the Boston Globe's Spotlight team. Thank you so much, Michael.
Oh, it's great to be here.
And Kevin Ann Huckshorn, Assistant Hospital Administrator at Bridgewater State Hospital. True pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for all the work you're doing.
Thank you very much, Magda.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.